From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Tonight in Orlando, Florida, President Donald Trump formally announces his re-election bid. He has been teasing the announcement for weeks, but in reality, he's campaigned for a second term since the moment he took the oath of office in January of 2017. Here's the president in April at a rally in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Every day between now and November 2020, we are going to keep on working, we are going to keep on fighting, and we are going to keep on winning, winning, winning. We are going to win. Remember, I used to tell you about winning. We're winning.
The president is likely to use familiar refrains on the campaign trail. He'll talk about immigration for sure and his America First foreign policy, which now includes sending 1,000 more troops to the Middle East. There's a celebration of the GOP's tax cut, claims on health care, low unemployment, and of course his fury at the Mueller report. But will incumbent Trump strategy look a lot like insurgent Trump strategy from 2016? So this hour on Point, a first look at President Trump's playbook for 2020. And you can join us. What do you want to see from President Trump between now and next year's election? Did his first term in office change your mind? Is it changing your mind? Do you think his message and vision will resonate for the voters who put him in office in 2016? Has he earned your vote? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining us today from Washington is Whit Ayers, a Republican pollster and strategist and president of North Star Opinion Research. Whit Ayers, welcome back to On Point.
Hello, Meghna. Good to be with you.
It's great to have you. Also with us from Newark, Delaware, is Kim Alfano, a Republican strategist and the president and CEO of Alfano Communications. Kim, welcome back to On Point to you.
Thanks, Meghna. Hi.
Well, it's good to have you both, and we'll throw a Democratic strategist into the mix a little bit later. But first, Kim and Whit, let me just, for the sake of full disclosure and transparency, just double check for listeners that you did not serve on the Trump campaign in 2016, either of you. Is that right?
That is correct.
And are either of you going to work on the Trump campaign for 2020?
Not likely.
I doubt it.
Okay, good. In this day and age, you can never have too much disclosure. So get that out of the way. All right. So Kim, let me first start with you. What do you think obviously the president's strategy as it were in 2016, as they were, worked for him. Is he going to follow the same playbook that he did last time around for 2020?
I don't think he's capable of following any other playbook because it's uniquely Trump. He redefined the timetable that elections are run on. He has made what was once just sort of a 24-hour news cycle a 10-minute news cycle, and he's the master of it. So, everybody's hair's on fire about all these polls, and I know Whit will tell you because he's a brilliant pollster, polls this early are deceiving. But with Trump, especially because he can change the narrative in 10 seconds, mm-hmm. He can do something to avert our eyes and put a shiny object in another direction and then another direction. There's going to be so many ups and downs. I think he just does what Trump does best in campaigns. That's his whole, modus operandi. He is a campaigner.
Whit, what's your take on that?
Both parties have significant challenges for the 2020 election. The greatest challenge for the Trump campaign is that Donald Trump received only 46% of the vote in 2016. That's one percentage point less than Mitt Romney got in 2012. His job approval has never exceeded that level. The average in Real Clear Politics today is 44%. So the real question is, can you win re-election in 2020 with less than a majority of the popular vote when a majority voted for somebody else in 16 and a majority disapproves of his job performance? We know that it can happen. Not only did Trump show that it can happen in 2016, during my lifetime, we've had presidents elected with only 43% mm-hmm. of the popular vote. Bill Clinton in 1992, when Ross Perot got 19%, and Richard Nixon in 1968, when George Wallace got 13.5%. So it can happen. But it's a challenge.
Okay. Well, you know, since Kim mentioned recent news around recent polling, I just want to play a moment from the president's interview with George Stephanopoulos from ABC last week, when Stephanopoulos asked President Trump about leaked polling information that showed Trump trailing former Vice President Joe Biden significantly in key battleground states. And here's their interaction.
But even your own polls show you're behind right now, don't they?
No. My polls show that I'm winning everywhere.
I don't know. We've all seen these reports that with 15 out of 17 states, you spent $2 million on a poll and you're behind in 15 out of 17 states.
Nobody showed you those polls because those polls don't exist, George. Those polls don't exist. But I just had a meeting with somebody that's a pollster, and I'm winning everywhere. So I don't know what you're talking about.
So you don't feel like you're behind right now. You're not fighting from behind.
I haven't even started yet, but we're getting tremendous polls.
It's President Trump talking with ABC's George Stephanopoulos. And a few seconds after this interaction, the president went off the record. He stopped the interview to call his campaign manager to ask him about that polling information. The Trump campaign later fired those pollsters, and the president tweeted last night that, quote, only fake polls show us behind the Motley Crue, end quote. Now, Kim, I take your point about we are, you know, in the world of politics, we're like decades away from Election Day. And so who knows what current polling says. But respond to what the president said in this clip, that he's just he can control the narrative in such a way that he simply just denies that polls exist. Is that effective?
Listen. He has been effective at repeating his truth over and over again, and it resonates with the people that he wants it to resonate with. I would have said the poll happened in March. Joe Biden hadn't even been in the race yet, and Trump may be coming from the point of view that there's been something since. But, you know, he is the master of defining his own universe and pushing it ahead, you know, like a bulldog.
Mm-hmm. Well, what airs that universe, though, now, regardless of how the president wishes to define it, it includes the concrete actions of his first term thus far. So how much of that is going to be a strength or a liability for his campaign for 2020?
For the people who already support the president, it will be a significant strength. You talk to Republicans around the country, and they talk about the conservative judges, not just in the Supreme Court, but down through lower courts. They talk about tax cut, talk about regulatory reform, a booming economy, the lowest unemployment in half a century, and a record stock market. And there are all kinds of other things, Keystone Pipeline, moving the embassy to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv. So Republicans perceive that the president has a record of concrete results that he'll be able to sell effectively to the country.
Mm. So Kim, then, tell me a little bit about how you're not advising the Trump campaign, just to be clear. But if you were, theoretically, what would you advise the campaign to do? Because, yes, to your point, there is the president and his masterful ability to capture the public's attention. But then there's also the campaign itself and its ground game. I mean, where should the campaign be focusing its efforts?
I think it's got to be a dual strategy. I mean, the latest Fox poll, while it showed Trump behind nationally, there's still 57% optimism on the economy. That's obviously the point that he needs to make intellectually. And Witt's right. He outlined many of the accomplishments. And, you know, those are believed or not believed by how you're doing personally. And if they're true, the country's doing much better personally. Even, you know, people who don't like Donald Trump will admit that that we're in a better place than we were just a few years ago. But at the same time, if Donald Trump stops and just talks about those old school issues, he starts to sound like the adults in the Peanuts cartoons. And that's the Democrats' problem. They want to talk about all of these issues. Trump needs to throw his sort of circus atmosphere in there to keep the attention on him. So I wouldn't dial him back too much. I mean, I think he steps on himself over and over again. But the effect of that is we talk about him every single minute of every single day. And that's what he wants. And I think that's not, you know, it's worked for him in the past.
And Whit, what's your response to that?
Donald Trump is a non-traditional president, and he has severed the traditional relationship between economic well-being and presidential job approval. Any other president with this economy would have a job approval in the upper 50s, maybe lower 60s. And Donald Trump is well below that. So the real question we're going to test in this election is whether a good economy will carry the incumbent or whether the divide between presidential approval and the good economy is going to come out in the vote again. I don't know the answer to that. We're going to find out.
I think just really quick, I think it's – and Whit, tell me if you think this is true, but job approval for Trump has become personality approval. You know, it's not – when people talk about Trump's job approval, it's a personal thing. Do they like the way he's acting? Because if you talk about, again, the specifics of the economy, people are happy with where we are. So I think it's more he's severed that relationship because it's no longer about the job he's doing. It's about the way he's doing it.
Kim, I agree with you completely. The job approval is a measure of Donald Trump's conduct and behavior in office more than the objective state of the economy.
So in that case, we have a solid core of people who will support the president regardless, a solid core of people who will oppose him regardless. I mean, how much do we know about his approval rating amongst swing voters?
Well, we know that the independents have a majority who disapprove of his job performance. But that raises the challenge of the Democrats, which we should talk about after the break.
Which we will definitely do. So Whit Ayers and Kim Alfano, stand by for just a moment. We are talking about the fact that President Donald Trump officially launches his re-election bid tonight in Orlando, Florida, and what that means to you. Has he won your vote again for another term in office? Will you vote against him? What do you think this campaign is going to look like? We'll be back. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking this hour about the fact that President Donald Trump officially launches his re-election bid tonight in Orlando, Florida. And we're joined today by Kim Alfano. She's a Republican strategist and president and CEO of Alfano Communications. And Whit Ayers is also with us. He's a Republican pollster and strategist and president of North Star Opinion Research. And let's listen to a little bit from the president himself. On an April 27th rally in Green Bay, Wisconsin, President Trump told the crowd that they joined his movement because, this is what he told them, they rejected the failures and betrayals of the past.
You were betrayed by dishonest people. You were betrayed by stupid people. You stared down a corrupt system that enriched itself at your expense. You protected your family. You defended your dignity. You recaptured your destiny, and you took back your country with that great election 2.5 years ago.
That's the president at a rally in April. Well, ABC News' George Stephanopoulos asked President Trump about his 2020 strategy when joining him on the campaign trail in Iowa. And yeah, we're using a lot of tape from ABC because, quite frankly, it was an extensive interview that aired on Sunday night. So here's this moment.
What's your pitch to the swing voter on the fence?
Safety, security, great economy, and I think I've done more than any other first-term president ever. I have a phony witch hunt, which is just a phony pile of stuff. Mueller comes out, there's no collusion, and essentially a ruling that no obstruction, and they keep going with it. You know what? People are angry about it.
That's President Donald Trump speaking to ABC News' George Stephanopoulos. And to be clear, the Mueller report stated that if they could explicitly state that there was no obstruction, they would. But the Mueller report did not state that. Let's go to the phones. James is calling from Jefferson City, Missouri. James, you're on the air.
Hi. I will vote for I would like to vote Democrat, but it's going to be according on who they come up with. I have a bad taste in my mouth for the Democrats ever since the Kavanaugh hearing. I think they were very sneaky, but I am issue-oriented, and I would like to see someone who is either going to have gun control or I think all modern countries should have universal health care. But if we get a middle of the roader, if we get an old white guy like Biden, I probably will vote for Trump because I believe I know what I'm getting with Trump. With a Democrat, I never know. I just don't trust him. But if we get, especially if we get a woman candidate or if we get another black candidate or some minority, I'll probably go Democrat. I voted for Obama, and I think he's one of the best presidents we ever had. I don't like the way Trump sounds when he talks. He sounds like an eighth grader. But the Democrats don't sound much better, and I know that they lie to your face. And so that's the way I'll go.
Okay, so James, hang on for a second. So I hear your criticism of the Democrats and also your criticism of the president, but do you when you say you know you get what you're getting with President Trump, what is it that you think you're getting with him?
Well, he says, you know, what he said he was going to do is when he was running, like he said he wants to build a wall. That's what he's sticking to his guns. He's going to, I think he'll eventually get that done. Not that I'm that big of a supporter of the wall. I think we are a country that should have more immigrants, but at least I know what I'm getting with him, you know?
I see. And one more thing. So you said that you believe the Democrats lie. Do you believe the president ever lies?
Oh, he lies all the time.
Okay.
He exaggerates. Let's put it that way. He exaggerates. He's a salesman.
I see. Okay. Well, James, thank you so much for your call. So Kim Alfano, decipher what James said to us. He making the point that who the Democrats choose as their nominee is going to be decisive for him.
I think that's really interesting. I would think that the opposite of Trump would be Biden in people's mind because he has that ability to be, you know, the man's man. He can get down with the people and be very empathetic. All the things, the authenticity that Trump brings to the table. Whether you like who he is or not, I think what he's saying is Trump's 100% authentic. He's not encumbered by social problems, by, you know, social rules. He's unspun. He's unimpeachably unhandled. And that is, you know, basically, I think Trump runs against not just the Democrats, but the whole political establishment mm-hmm. that has frustrated people for so long. And I think that's what he's saying is, you know, they're so tired of people that are political and Trump. You might not like him. You might think he's a jerk. But at the end of the day, he says what he says and he does what he does.
Yeah. So, Whit Ayers, what's your thought on that?
James put his finger on the real challenge the Democrats face. And that is, with so much energy in the far left wing of the party, can the Democrats nominate someone who can unite the majority of the country that disapproves of Donald Trump's job performance? To think about that, you've got to look at the states where Democrats need more votes, and it's not Massachusetts or California or New York.
Mm-hmm.
The easiest states to get back would be those that Donald Trump won by a hair in 2016, the 7/10 of a point victory in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, and the 2/10 of a point victory in Michigan, driven by a lot of blue-collar whites who switched from Obama in 2012 to Trump in 2016. Joe Biden has a natural affinity for those people. There may be other candidates like Amy Klobuchar, the senator from Minnesota, who could appeal to them, but it's hard for me to see a liberal professor from Massachusetts in Elizabeth Warren or a liberal from the left coast in Kamala Harris appealing to those blue-collar whites.
Okay, so let's ask a Democrat about what he thinks of all this. Joining us now from Tallahassee, Florida, is Steve Shale. He's a Democratic strategist, senior advisor to President Obama's reelection efforts in Florida back in 2012, and he directed the Obama-Biden campaign in Florida in 2008 as well. Steve, welcome to On Point.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Okay, so lots of things to talk with you about, Steve. First of all, you heard our caller there saying that, in fact, he wouldn't vote for Joe Biden if Biden became the nominee, and he'd rather vote for President Trump instead. I know Biden's your man. How do you respond to that tension between Democrats feeling that they need to put up someone who's quote-unquote electable with also satisfying sort of the restive left wing of the party?
Well, I think that our primary process will be very helpful. You know, I don't look at having 21 candidates as something that scares me. I think the Republicans honestly showed us an in 2016 that the primary process can work through, let the party work through some issues and come up with a nominee and the party unites behind him. And I do think there's one thing right now uniting Democrats. It's the desire to see Donald Trump as a one-term president. So, yeah, I think that we'll have a work through Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, come to Florida at some point. I will end up with a nominee. I'm hoping it'll be Joe Biden. I think he gives us our best chance. I also think he is the one candidate who on day one can walk back into the White House and restore confidence in America, which I think is vital right now. But regardless, I think we're going to come out of this process excited, united, and it'll be a close election.
Mm. Well, you just heard Whit Ayers talk about he sees that Democrats need to focus their efforts on the states that President Trump won by a hair. Talk to me about why you think it's significant, Steve, that the president is opening up his official reelection bid in Florida, in Orlando. Why is he doing that?
Well, Whit knows Florida well. He's worked here before. And, for Republicans, while there is a path to the presidency without Florida, it is a very difficult path. The last Republican to go to the White House without Florida was Calvin Coolidge. And in those days, we didn't even have mosquito control here yet. So it's a very different state than it was in the 20s. For Trump, really, he has to win Florida to have a real path back to the White House. So coming to Florida, putting a stake in the ground, and I think, frankly, going to Orlando, which is the heart of the I-4 corridor, which is where the heart of sort of swing votes in Florida tend to live, is a sign that he understands just how important it is. And I think to Whit's point also about those states that Trump won by a narrow margin, and while Florida was a point, there were states that were narrower. What's interesting about Florida, and particularly the area of the state that Trump is going to, is the types of voters that live in the counties around Orlando, around Tampa, the voters that voted for Romney, voted for Bush, then voted for Obama once, if not twice, and then voted for Trump. They tend to, frankly, be retirees from the same states that we have to win, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. And so a lot of them are kind of the same voters.
Mm. Well, did the midterm elections give you any insight as to the president's prospects in Florida?
Well, I think we nominated a candidate for governor that represented a sort of more of the liberal wing of our party, and it came up short. Mm-hmm. And I think that, when you look back at Obama in 2008, I think there are a lot of people that have learned the lessons of Obama that they want to learn. The reality is Barack Obama, when he ran for Florida, president in Florida and Indiana and elsewhere, talked about things like, cutting taxes for middle-class families, talked about expanding health care, talked about creating an economy to work for all. He did not run a sort of hardcore campaign that focused on sort of one wing of the country. He ran a campaign around uniting Americans around, issues that were broadly believed in. So I think that if there was a lesson out of Florida in 2018 for 2020, is we have to be running a nominee that can appeal to more voters.
Yeah. So, Kim Alfano, let me turn back to you here for a second, because Steve Shale has also written about the fact that when President Obama ran, at the very least in his first campaign, there was record turnout for Democrats. But mm-hmm. relying on record turnout is not a winning strategy in the long run here. So if we don't see that for Republicans or Democrats this time around, what position does that put President Trump in?
Well, I think President Trump has one other advantage that the Democrats don't. If they elect Joe Biden in the primaries, that would be smart, because Joe Biden can focus on that key crosstab between the ones who disapprove of Trump's job rating but approve of how the economy's going. If he's dragged to the left by his party, that is still something that happens in the Democratic Party. That's a problem. But what Trump did is sever that tie with the extreme of his party. He kind of made up his own thing, and he is unencumbered by that, whereas Joe Biden's going to have to negotiate that. If he can successfully sever that tie, then it might be a head-to-head authenticity ballot battle, and it might be something that that will allow him to talk to those voters that Steve's talking about. And I agree. I don't think what we hear on the national news every day is not the election that we need to focus on. Mm-hmm. I think we need to watch what he does in every one of those states, because all politics is local now. And while the news may be at large pounding on him, that's beneficial to Donald Trump as long as he's doing well in the individual states and he's talking to people and saying, look, see what the national, mob is doing to me. They're not like us.
Yes.
And I think that's the key right there.
Right. So, Steve, let me turn back to you here for a second, because Kim several times has really underscored an important point about what 2020 is versus what 2016 was. Because now, this time around, as she points out, we know about the president's masterful ability to dominate the news cycle, to turn the media's attention on a dime. We know about that he skillfully and historically upended political and campaign norms that had been in place for 50 years in this country. So this time around, the Democrats know all these things. So how do you run a campaign against that?
Well, I mean, first of all, we need to work through our nomination process. But I think it's also, I think Kim's point is spot on. And I think, you know, certainly Republicans learned this in 2012, that, you know, elections against incumbents are not necessarily referendum. I think, you know, the conventional wisdom among my Republican friends in 2012 is there's no way voters are going to vote for Barack Obama again. But the reality is that elections are choices. And so it's not only a function of how, you know, we work through our process and nominate our choice for 2020, but it is in these individual states and specifically in places like mine, frankly, individual counties within states where how that choice is framed. And, you know, those voters that do approve of the economy, but have real issues with the way that Trump conducts himself as president, or voters who feel like the economy has left them behind, but are concerned about other issues, how that choice is framed is going to be important. And I think that we have to be careful as Democrats to not fall into the trap of thinking this is simply just an election based on Trump's behavior. I think if we go down that road, we're not going to win.
Okay, so Whit,
can I add one? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Whit.
Magda, when it comes to turnout, it's worth noting that the turnout in the 2018 midterm elections was the highest in a century, the highest since 1914. So people are fired up about politics. In many ways, one of the best aspects of the Trump presidency is that it has made a lot of voters who may have been apathetic about politics in the past realize how much it matters. As the late, great Charles Krauthammer was fond of saying, if you don't get your politics right, nothing else matters. And I think a lot of people are realizing that today.
Can I add one quick thing?
Sure, Kim, go ahead.
You know, if people can dispassionately strip Trump's personality from the fight over the agenda, that might be helpful. I mean, you have to ask yourself, if you're one of those voters in the collar counties in Wisconsin or in Pennsylvania where I live, what's at stake? The left seems to be – the far left seems to those voters as potentially punitive. All of the success in the economy that they've gained, the gains in their 401k, the fear is they know Donald Trump is moving the economy that direction, but they have no idea if it'll get swiped back by the next Democrat, especially if you pick a far left Democrat. And at the end of the day, you know, if you take if Trump is smart, he – continues to run his personality campaign because it really doesn't affect your wallet. It doesn't affect what's going on at the kitchen table. He can have this dual personality of being just offensive and obnoxious in person, but the economy is doing what you need to be done. So do you care? Do you care if someone who's in the presidency is horrible, if you're doing well, or do you want someone who is nice but the economy changes?
Mm-hmm. So, Steve Shale, I know we've just got you for another minute here. Let me ask you, you talked about the primary process for Democrats. Given the person that the Democratic nominee will eventually be running against, President Trump, and again, his power to hold the nation's attention here, would you prefer to see the primary process kind of run itself out quickly amongst the Democrats for a nominee to emerge more quickly, or should the process drag on?
Well, I'd like to see it come to an earlier conclusion. And I think it practically will. I mean, you have the first state is in February 3rd, and then you got Florida, you know, 6 weeks later on the 17th of March, and there's a ton of huge states between Florida and Iowa. So I think functionally we're going to have a good sense of who our nominee is by the middle of March. The way our delegates are selected, it may take a while to get to a majority, but I think we'll know. And I do think that's important for one reason. The earlier that we can get started on the ground registering voters and getting ready for the general election, just functionally we'll be in a better place come November.
Well, Steve Shale joining us from Tallahassee, Florida. He's a Democratic strategist and senior advisor to President Obama's reelection efforts in Florida in 2012. Steve, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thank y'all.
And Whit Ayers and Kim Alfano, stand by here for just a second. We've got a lot of people on the line, so I will get to callers when we come back, so stick with us. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about President Donald Trump's strategy for re-election as he officially launches his 2020 campaign bid today, or later today, I should say, in Orlando, Florida. I'm joined today by Kim Alfano and Whit Ayers, and let's listen to a little bit of what the president himself said to George Stephanopoulos on ABC News in an interview that aired on Sunday night. Stephanopoulos questioned Trump about his biggest goal for his second term, if he wins it, as president.
Elections are about tomorrow, not yesterday. When you go to voters over this next year, what is the big unfinished piece of business you're going to say, this is what we're going to get done?
So we almost had health care done. Health care is a disaster, Obamacare. But we've managed it much better than they managed it. So we've made it serviceable, but it's not great. We're going to produce phenomenal health care. And we already have the concept of the plan. And it'll be much better.
Tell people what the plan is.
Yeah, well, we'll be announcing that in about 2 months, maybe less.
Might have been a little hard to hear, but Stephanopoulos asked, don't you have to tell people what the plan is? Well, we got lots of comments coming in online. Bill GKD says, Trump campaign strategy, just keep on lying because his base either doesn't care that he lies constantly or just believes his lies. Tom W. says, I hope Democrats are able to temper their election enthusiasm this time around. Their absolute certainty of a win by Hillary Clinton in the last campaign caused them to lose their minds when Trump won the presidency in 2016, as he will again in 2020. Well, let's go to the phones. Alex is calling from Schenectady, New York. Alex, you're on the air.
Hello. Huge fan of the show. Thank you. I believe the conversation is laboring under the assumption that we're going to have a robust economy in 2020. I think many economists are predicting a recession, and I think the Trump administration is predicting a recession, hence the aggression towards Iran. Thank you.
So, Alex, thank you for your call. Whit Ayers, is the administration being overly confident about good news on the economy front?
I don't think so. I think while there's always the possibility of a slowdown in the economy that would not be helpful for the president, there are no indications currently on the horizon that a recession is imminent. So I think you plan for a reasonably strong economy if you're in the Trump campaign.
Okay. There's lots of callers here, so let's keep going to them. Mason is calling from Springfield, Illinois. Mason, you're on the air.
Hi. Wow, this is my first time.
Well, welcome.
I had a question. So in 2016, I voted for Hillary simply because she wasn't Trump. I'm a moderate or independent voter. So I just, out of curiosity, I know there's like a million candidates right now, but who do you predict would be Trump's biggest threat in 2020?
Okay, so Mason, I'll ask our guest that in a second here, but what's your answer to your own question?
I don't know yet. I go back and forth every other day. My wife really likes Bernie. I've got a couple of friends that really like Biden. I don't know. I don't. And like I said, because I can be swayed either way. I voted Hillary simply because she wasn't Trump. I didn't necessarily like her, but she wasn't Trump.
Right.
I was one of those.
Okay. Well, Mason, thank you for your call. So, Kim Alfano, do you have you want to take a stab at that? Who do you think would be the greatest threat from the Democratic Party?
Well, the greatest threat would be Biden if Biden can match the authenticity level of Trump, or as best he can, and then combine it with some compassion and some nice guy, and not portray his, you know, it's really Trump is going to try to paint Joe Biden with a brush of, you know, he's going to take away all of the success that we've gathered in your economy. So he's going to be a punitive president. And if Biden can, push back on that and say, no, I have equally as robust economic ideas, you're not going to lose your gains, but I'm actually truthful and I've got, you know, a decent morality and I'm, you know, I can bring some credit back to the country, then he could win. But again, Trump is going to take whomever runs and say they're either a nutty, far left, punitive president, or they're part of the political establishment that hasn't done anything for years and years and years.
Yeah. Whit, what's your take?
As usual, I agree with Kim. Joe Biden has the best chance of uniting the non-Trump vote in the country, and he also has the best prospect of appealing to exactly those voters the Democrats need to retake an Electoral College majority.
Hmm. So then it seems as if both of you are saying that the question isn't so much what the president will do, but will Democrats rally around. We've been talking about this a lot over the past several months, the desire for electability over the ideal, perhaps progressive candidate.
Very few people have changed their minds about Donald Trump. Very few. He has 44% job approval today in the Real Clear Politics average. He had 44% right after he was elected. People understood exactly what they were getting with Donald Trump when they voted for him or against him in 2016, which is one reason why events have not changed his job approval, like the Mueller report has had no effect on his job approval. So people have pretty well made up their minds about Donald Trump. The real question is what the Democrats are going to offer as an alternative.
Let's go to Suzanne, who's calling from Grinnell, Iowa. Suzanne, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, thanks. I feel like we're about, I'm a Democrat, and I feel like we're about to make the same mistake we made in 2016. Apparently, Hillary was the, quote, electable candidate, and that's why people went with her. And now we have Biden as, quote, the electable person, and that's why people are rallying behind Biden. But that caller clearly said, don't give me Biden, and that matches what I saw when I knocked on doors. I knocked on doors for Bernie. And I had people who said, I'll either vote for Trump or Bernie. And this is the message that somehow the Democrats weren't getting, is that they have this dichotomy of left and right. And what people are looking for is authenticity. That's what supposedly Trump has, that he's speaking the truth. I don't think he is, but and so we need to match it with somebody who has a heart and vision and passion, and people know exactly what that caller said. We know what we get. We know somebody is not saying, well, would you like it in a box? Would you like it in a car? Would you like it? No, I don't like the Sam I am. They want somebody who's not remaking themselves in the image of what they think people want. And he has a an enthusiasm problem. That's what when Democrats lose is when people stay home.
Right. Well, Suzanne, thank you so much for your call. Let's pick up on that thought with Ryan, who's calling from Dayton, Ohio. Ryan, what do you think about what Suzanne said, that electability isn't the issue here, but authenticity?
Hi. Yeah, I totally agree with her. Biden, I mean, your guess is saying that Biden is the, you know, the opposite of Trump, and I completely disagree with that. I think people see him as a politician, and I live here in the Midwest, and I'm a Democrat, and all of the Republicans I have talked to that aren't happy with Trump said they would have voted for Biden, including my parents. And I also think that Biden would get eaten up by Trump in the general elections. We have to be thinking about that as well, not just who can win the Democratic nomination. I think his connection to Hillary and Obama and his way he can make gas and whatnot, Trump would just tear him up. And Bernie is solid and just lets things roll off his back. And I think he has a much better chance.
Ryan,
Magna?
Yeah, go ahead, Whit.
There is no question that Bernie Sanders is authentic. He's an authentic socialist. He's not even a Democrat. He is so socialist that he spent his honeymoon in the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics back when there was a USSR. It's hard for me to imagine America electing a true blue authentic socialist as president of the United States.
Authenticity has to be authentically my heart and soul. Authentically for me, authentically, you know, like I said, Whit's again, absolutely right. You know, Bernie is authentic, but he's authentically, obviously not going to continue on the same path. I mean, listen, I grew up in Delaware. I know Joe Biden. Joe Biden is no Hillary Clinton. Face to face and on the campaign trail, he can connect with voters in an emotional and a visceral way as good, maybe a little less than Trump can. And he can do it with much more personal and compassionate emotion. The problem that he'll have is he has a record. He has been in Washington forever, and he can be painted as part of that establishment.
Right.
But when you're in Wisconsin and you're shaking Joe Biden's hand, that is not what you're going to think.
But what about when that reminder of hooking Joe Biden back onto his own record with his association with Hillary Clinton? What about when that reminder constantly comes from Donald Trump? Is that more effective in turning voters potentially away from Biden?
I think if he doesn't fall into the trap of responding by going left, by trying to be equally as sensational on the other side of the political paradigm, and if he responds as Joe Biden saying, yeah, I was pro-life. Yeah, I do believe this. I do believe that, and continues on his calm, authentic sort of path, that would be more effective than, you know, joining with the pearl clutchers and hair setting on fire-ers in the Democratic Party who hyperbolically go nuts every single day. And it's just not sustainable.
Yeah. Well, I just want to take a second to turn our lens back squarely onto the president and how he runs, right, and how he is on the campaign trail. And really what I want to talk with both of you about for a second is his use of the media and the media's role in presidential politics right now. So first of all, for example, as the campaign has ratcheted up, President Trump, as he does, has mocked and used very derisive, even racist nicknames for many of the prominent presidential Democratic candidates, including Biden and South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg and Senator Bernie Sanders and Senator Elizabeth Warren. So I don't love the fact that the president does this, but here's a little taste of the names that he has been calling Democratic candidates.
Pocahontas, Sleepy Joe, and Crazy Bernie.
Biden, who's the loser?
Buttigieg.
Obama took him off the trash heap.
Buttigieg. They say edge.
Joe Biden is a dummy.
Last night I watched Alfred E. Newman.
It's President Trump. Now, the president, though, is very right about the fact that the media does love to pay attention to him during his interview with George Stephanopoulos on ABC. Stephanopoulos asked in Iowa voters about their views of the president and got complaints from those voters about the president's tweets. And here's how President Trump responded to that.
I have a very unfair press. It's a fake news. It's a corrupt news. If I don't use social media, I do not get the word out. I put it out and then it goes onto your platform. I put one out this morning. And as soon as I pressed the button, they said, we have breaking news. Every network, every station, we have breaking news. They read my tweet. Why is that bad?
What they're talking about, though, is you're calling people names. It's demeaning.
Well, you know what? I'll bet they do like it. They may tell you that, but I'll bet they like it.
So, Kim Alfano, my question for both you and Whit Ayers is, does the way the media covers Trump, it seems like it actually only benefits him.
Absolutely. Trump is brilliant in getting the media to pay attention to every little thing that he does. He is unencumbered by social contracts. He's unencumbered by political discourse. He doesn't have even a code of how you behave. And it's stumped the press and the Democrats, frankly. And all they can do is talk about the way he acts, whether he's truthful or not. The Democrats focusing on potentially impeaching him, the Mueller report. That's all great. Guess what they're not doing? Dismantling all of the success that he's had in the economy. He's saying, look over here. Here's who I am. But at the same time, he's keeping the sort of fundamentals and basics moving in his direction. And people at home, like I said, it's like the Charlie Brown adults. It's just buzz. When you're at home eating dinner and just bought groceries, that's what you care about.
Whit Ayers, I mean, is that because President Trump truly has this superpower when it comes to controlling the media narrative? Or is it because, that's kind of what people want to hear, that he's a masterful entertainer and can hold people's attention that way?
There's no question that he's a master of Twitter. He's a master of capturing and holding people's attention. And he's the master at remaining the center of attention of our political life. Donald Trump supporters, whenever they turn on a network that's not Fox, see nothing but a wall of criticism and a heap of scorn. And that simply reinforces their support for the president.
We'll see if we can sneak in a couple, at least one more call in here. Emmanuel is calling from Dayton, Ohio. Emmanuel, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm a Trump Democrat, and I'm an immigrant as well. I supported Obama and then voted for Trump. But my message to Democrats is they need to stop the Mossadegh-like operation in Iran against Trump. I mean, from what I see, from my point of view, it looks like the CIA and the FBI operation along with the Democratic Party and media to depose Trump. So if you keep doing that, you know, people like me will get really mad and we will never support you guys. I mean, I'm not going back to the Democratic Party unless they find somebody like Trump who works for the people. Right. And just to give you an example, if you drive on the countryside of Ohio for the past, before 2 years, you would see death and destruction. I mean, every young person is addicted to drugs. There are no jobs. But today the situation is different. I mean, the death and destruction has changed. So my message to Democrats is don't overplay the impeachment card. Don't repeat the Iranian history in the United States. You might end up with Mike Pence as the pastor of Pence.
Well, Emmanuel, I'm going to take it back to you because we just have 90 seconds to go. But thank you so much for your call. Kim Alfano, this has been a fascinating conversation, especially hearing from the people who've called in. Granted, they're a self-selecting population of the hundreds of millions of voters in America. But your last thought for today as the president launches his reelection bid?
I think you just hit it on the head. I'm not going to vote for someone else unless they're like Trump and working for the people.
And Whit Ayers?
I mean, that is the undercurrent.
Whit Ayers, your last thought?
A fascinating race coming up that will demonstrate to America how critically important our politics is. I encourage everyone to get out and participate.
Well, Whit Ayers, Republican pollster and strategist and president of North Star Opinion Research, thank you so much for joining us today.
So good to be with you.
And Kim Alfano, Republican strategist and president and CEO of Alfano Communications. Kim, thank you so much as well.
Thanks, Megda, and see you later, Whit.
I'm sure we'll see seeing both of you a lot in the next year plus. And we heard a little earlier in the show from Steve Shale, Democratic strategist as well. And listeners, you can now follow the sights and sounds of our show on Instagram. We're live there at OnPoint NPR. That's OnPoint NPR. So hop over to Instagram and give us a follow. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.